Welcome to the Nicholas Natale Show, where we chat with entrepreneurs, experts, and entertainers to help you live a more fulfilling life and take your business to the next level. This week on the podcast, we're chatting about what could be causing the gas prices to be so darn high. Riddle of the week, what's Forrest Gump's password? Stay tuned to the end of the episode to find out. This episode is professionally mixed and mastered by a gentleman who you know and love, Grant Singer, the audio engineer wizard. If you'd like Grant to audio engineer your podcast, film, or music, click the link to singerville.com in the show notes or reach out to him on Instagram at Grant E. Singer. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Screenshot it and share it to your Instagram story, tagging me so I can reshare it. That was the intro. Now here is the episode. If you own an automobile and you don't live under a rock like Patrick Starr, you've seen that the gas prices are shooting sky high. In March of 2022, not too long ago, the national average was $4.17 per gallon. And here in Southern California, I've been paying between $6.50 and $7 every single time I need to fill her up. And that's insane. That's per gallon. Now I'm not saying I'm paying $7 to fill up my entire tank. I'm just, it's per gallon, or maybe 9/10 of a gallon, really. And I've been having conversations asking people, why do they think gas prices are so high? And most say that it's due to the Ukraine and Russia conflict or that pesky inflation. Now, I'm no economist. Heck, I'm barely educated. But solely blaming the conflict and inflation doesn't really add up in my eyes. I'm not sure. Who's to say that's all there is to it? So I did a little bit of digging. And according to the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, in 2021, the U.S. imported an average of 209,000 barrels per day of crude oil from Russia. Sounds like a lot, but it really only makes up about 3% of all of our imports and just 1% of the total crude oil processed by American refineries. So could the conflict in Biden's sanctions on Russia alone be shooting our gas prices sky high? Is the government using the conflict as a scapegoat? Like, hey, look over there. Look at the war. That's what's the matter. We're not doing anything. What's really going on? So let's take a look under the hood and see what we find. Let's start with the general timeline overview. In March of 2019, the national average gas price was around $2.52. Now let's jump to 2020, the year that felt like 10. You know what I'm talking about. Gas prices plummeted when everyone cut their driving nearly in half and they stayed inside. There wasn't as much of a demand, so in April of 2020, the national average was down to $1.94 per gallon. That's nice, right? I mean, that sounds like something we would like. But then, as people got a little more confident, they got confident going into the sun again, gas prices crept up to about $2.82 a gallon in March 2021. We were back. Prices were down, but they climbed their way back up. And we were good, all right? The prices, knock it off. But they just kept climbing. And they didn't stop climbing. So let's take a look at inflation. Inflation is rail like Jerusalem. That was a joke. It was a pretty clever joke, I'd say. Did you laugh? The inflation rate is currently sitting near 8% over the previous 12 months, which is the highest it's been in 40 years. And the Consumer Price Index shows that from February 2021 to February 2022, the price of gasoline has skyrocketed by 38%. 38%. And a quick briefing on inflation, if you're new in town, is that the problem with the dollar is that it's constantly losing its value because the prices of goods and services, housing prices, gas, they don't all increase in value at the same time. They fluctuate and some grow in value faster than others. And if we take a look at the Consumer Price Index and what's been recorded, we can see that the increases in prices are vastly higher for gasoline than for all goods and services measured across the board, measured in the government's Consumer Price Index inflation gauge. And in fact, as you know, we recently came out of a year where the U.S. government printed over $10 trillion for the Federal Reserve stimulus package and a few other things to support small businesses during the pandemic. And that's going to devalue the dollar a little bit. So not only are gas prices going up, the value of our dollar is going down, making it feel even more expensive. 20 bucks just ain't what it used to be. You know what I'm saying? So let's talk about the nefarious pandemic, because it also played its part in contributing to the increase in gasoline prices in a few ways. The first being, since demand has come back, as businesses are opening up again, prices are rightfully going back up. But the other portion is, a few things haven't recovered as quickly, such as the supply, restoring drilling capacity, sluggish production increases, and there's higher transportation costs. The Bureau of Labor Statistics talks about how there was an OPEC Plus meeting in April of 2020. All of the members agreed to reduce their production. Big production cut. And even Russia complied. So you know that's saying something. And the agreement called for a composite cut of 9.7 million barrels per day for the following few months during those uncertain times. And the OPEC production fell to its lowest level since May of 1991. And from January to May of 2020, the United States and Canada, the first and fourth largest global oil producers, respectively, reduced output by a combined 3 million barrels per day. Then there was a big increase in June and July, but they were still operating at a reduced pace, despite demand somewhat returning. In short, it was this back and forth game from all of the world's oil producers of, whoa, we're going to slow down production, then we're going to speed up a little bit, kind of, not really. When I read through the Bureau of Labor Statistics and how they talked about it, it pretty much seemed as though essentially no one had any idea what they were doing. So they would slow down, and then they'd walk fast, and then they'd slow down. So there's that. On top of this wishy-washy recovery of the world's oil production as a whole, there have been some supply chain disruptions over the past few years that has contributed to the gas prices increasing. One of the more notable disruptions in the US was the Colonial Pipeline cyber hack in May of 2021. And this pipeline supplies about 45% of the East Coast fuel. They got nailed with a Russian-based ransomware attack and ended up paying $5 million as the ransom. Isn't that wild? This crippled their fuel deliveries, and they were down for a few days. And during that time, millions of barrels of oil had to be carried on trucks. That's wild to think about. Just millions of barrels on trucks instead of through a pipeline. And this is a fairly pointed example, of course, but I didn't only want to cover the scramble of all of the different countries are facing as they figure out how they're going to proceed with their own COVID requirements and facing shutdowns across the board from production to transportation. In addition to increasing efforts to remove the use of fossil fuels, and stick to the end of this episode because I'm going to be talking about how that's affecting the US, because it is. Let's talk about the Russian war first, though. Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the resulting sanctions have limited our oil supplies from Russia. That's true. That's for certain true. President Joe B. signed an executive order banning the import of Russian oil, liquefied natural gas, and coal to the United States in hopes of depriving Putin of the economic resources he uses to continue the war. Russia is the world's third largest oil producer and is responsible for exporting about 12% of the world's supply of crude oil. So, to some degree, any disruption to those exports can drive gas prices higher for consumers everywhere. However, if 97% of our oil imports isn't reliant on Russia, does that 3% make that insane of a difference at the pump? Maybe. But it appears that the majority of the repercussions we're facing from the war are more indirect due to Europe having a greater dependence on Russia. Now, here's where it gets juicy. The oil companies, American oil companies, they got their hand in this pot. They're not having a hand in this pot, because they may be slowing down their production in an effort to not overproduce, which they've done in the past, and they got burned for it. They lost billions of dollars for oil producers and their investors. The U.S. oil and gas drilling, it's a private sector industry. It's not government, despite 25% of the drilling taking place on federal land. And these oil drillers, they're still seeking to make a profit and satisfy those shareholders. And over the past decade, it seems that they were taking a grow-at-any-cost approach. So let me quickly catch you up to speed. From 2011 to 2014, the oil companies were balling out. They were just balling. Oil barrels were averaging $95 per barrel, and life was great for them. They were stoked. So they started producing a bunch of oil. Then they overproduced. And from 2015 to 2019, the prices averaged $53 per barrel. You know, profits were a little bit lower. No biggie, though. And a lot of the oil producers at that time were like, we're going to keep expanding. We're going to keep going for it. We want to get bigger and broader. Big, broad shoulders, these oil producers. Similar to how we see in tech startups, you tolerate a loss for the sake of scaling larger and taking over the market, with the expectation that profits will come later. Similar to how Mr. Beast runs his main channel, or how Amazon ran at a loss for so many years. So they were cool with it, until 2020 came, and then they got nailed, and it brought the average price per barrel down to $39, which is a pretty Big difference. And for many of these oil producers, this led to bankruptcy. And since the 2015-2016 timeframe, a Texas law firm has documented more than 600 oil and gas bankruptcies, with the effects being that they defaulted on more than $321 billion in debt. $321 billion with a B. B-b-b-billion. Raul LeBlanc, the vice president of the energy practice at S&P Global, had this to say. These guys, let me do a voice. These guys don't want to fire up because they don't want to throw their business model out of the window and lose all the credibility they've built with investors. They're also very hesitant about revving up the engine in an inflationary environment. Costs would go through the roof, and they're worried about getting sucker punched by the market when prices come back down. With that being said, oil prices are double what they were a year ago. We're approaching $100 a barrel in March of this year, right after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And that's the first time it's reached three digits in nearly 12 years. And they're still drilling. They're simply focused on short-term profit, and they want to have that profit for as long as they can. And they're going to keep at it for as long as they can, regardless of how much we have to pay for gas. They don't care. They don't care for that. Hi, friends. If you're enjoying this podcast, please share a screenshot or picture of yourself listening to it on social media and tag me so I can reshare it. If you know someone who would benefit from listening to this episode as well, please send it their way. Thanks. Back to the episode. And nearly 60% of these oil companies cited saying that investor pressure to maintain capital discipline is the primary reason they're not drilling more despite these skyrocketing prices. That's according to the Dallas Fed survey that they had. That's why they're holding on to this massive profit. They're just like, we're going to keep this demand really high so we can charge more and kind of pay back some of our shareholders. And they're essentially doing this because investors for so long in these energy stocks were thrown off by the volatility. They're like, why? What the heck's going on? And they are asking for more of these oil companies to pay back their debts and return money to their shareholders instead of going ahead with these profits and investing it into new wells, even if the new wells are going to be profitable. It's like, guys, you know, you botched it for so long. Just give us our money back. So that's another layer. And on top of that layer is another layer on top of that. It's like Trident layers. We should just get paid in gum. That's what the oil company should be paid with. Have a Trident layer for all this oil that you refuse to produce more of. The layer is going green. The push for going green. The market share of fossil fuels as an energy source seems to be headed toward extinction. I feel like that's kind of clear to see. We have a bunch of these world leaders with a big push from Joey B with an attempt to address global warming and reduce carbon emissions. In 2021, Joe Biden said this at an international climate change conference when he was asked about inflation, including gas prices. He said, "If gotta get the Joey B voice. If you take a look at gas prices and you take a look at oil prices, that is a consequence of thus far the refusal of Russia or the OPEC nations to pump more oil." It's not a very good impression, but it's weird. And I don't mean to nitpick a minor instance, but he was at this climate change conference, which revolves around the concerns of reducing emissions. And he's saying, we just need to pump more oil. That's the problem, which I'm not saying is good or bad. I just think the timing of it was probably a little odd. But the other thing that I have a hard time wrapping my own head around is that we're the largest producer of oil in the whole world, with arguably some of the strictest emission requirements. But in order to cut down our production for the sake of carbon emissions, we ask other countries to increase their production so we can have it imported. It's odd. It's like, yo, we want to take care of the world. Well, our world, where we breathe, and you guys go ahead and produce more oil and affect the environment that you live in, and we'll use your oil. The Biden administration recently delayed or stopped working on federal oil and gas leases and permits following a court ruling that struck down the administration's social cost of carbon metric to account for climate risk when holding lease sales or issuing permits. However, that being said, I don't want you to get this twisted. In Joey B's first year in office, he issued more than 3,500 drilling permits that he caught some criticism for from some climate activists. And keep in mind, these permits only help with about 1/4 of the U.S. oil production. The other 75% takes place on private land where federal permits aren't even required. Other things that's happened is Biden has also halted the controversial construction of the Keystone XL oil pipeline. He did that on his first day of office. Came in here and said, knock that off. It was about 8% done. And the Keystone XL pipeline was going to be an expansion of an existing North American pipeline that would have carried 830,000 barrels of crude oil from Alberta, Canada to Nebraska daily at its peak. It's probably closer to 800,000 from what I've read, but 830,000 at its peak. There's speculation that some individuals in Congress want to repeal long-standing tax breaks for fossil fuel drillers and replace them with green energy tax breaks that would disadvantage the oil and gas industry, which I am sure would bring their relationship closer. And there's also speculation that since the Biden administration has been adamant of climate change, the rising gas prices aren't as large of a problem in their eyes because it's incentivizing consumers to purchase electric vehicles, which, if true, is hoopla because a $200 gas bill at the end of each month is still much cheaper than a $60,000 Tessie. Tessie with my bestie. Now that's a lot of information. That's a lot of different angles. Let's talk about some of the solutions that have been proposed. The Gas Rebate Act of 2022. So first, there's chatter about a gas stimulus checks becoming a possibility. The old Gas Rebate Act 2022 is essentially saying that legislation would give a $100 monthly rebate and $100 for each dependent to help Americans pay the higher gas prices. And the idea is that the payments would continue throughout 2022 during any month when the national average gas price is $4 or more. It sounds nice in theory, getting another check from the govy. But anytime the government gives you money, we end up having to pay it back in one form or another. Another solution is in conversation with the Emergency Oil Reserve. And this has already started in a way. In November of 2021, Joey B. told the Department of Energy to release 50 million barrels of oil from the U.S.'s emergency stash of underground gas. But it didn't really help. So in March of 2022, he was like, unleash the floodgates, boys. And is now releasing 1 million barrels per day for the following 6 months. And that also doesn't seem like it's really helped. Another solution that's been thrown up, puked up, is reversing a law from the 1920s. There's this law, I know. It's called the Jones Act or the Merchant Marine Act of 1920, and this federal law requires water transportation of cargo among U.S. ports only to be conducted by registered American ships with U.S. crews, and reversing this law would allow foreign ships to move oil on our behalf, and the belief is that this would strengthen the supply chain of finished gasoline and lower prices on the West Coast and Northeast. The law was originally placed to support commercial activity and serve as a naval auxiliary in times of war or national emergency. I'm not entirely convinced that this would be a good idea. I'm just not. It just sounds a little sus. No thanks. Another solution that's being tossed up is just cutting or suspending gas tax, and that will lower gas prices for consumers. That's a fact. That's not speculatory. That would clearly cut costs. California, you know what I'm talking about. You feel that gas tax. Boy, do you feel that gas tax. Solution number 4, 5, we're tallying them off. We're just listening away. Is finish the Keystone Pipeline. Now, this one's a little controversial. The Keystone Pipeline could be finished, which would be a more upfront cost in hopes of a longer-term payout. The pipeline would have transported, as I stated a little bit earlier, around 800,000 barrels of oil per day from Canada to U.S. refineries along the Gulf Coast. And supposedly, pipelines are the most economically, environmentally friendly way of transporting oil, and we'd have more access to it. But it's controversial because supposedly it would only affect about 1% of our total supply of oil that we have. So there's no telling that it would make significant changes to our gas prices. Next. The federal government could let these massive profits in the market that these oil companies are raking in and use that to encourage and attract new capital investments for these oil companies so they can buy the equipment they need. And the argument here is that taxing away their profits would keep them starved for capital and not allow them to be able to increase production. And here's a solution that's been brainstormed through the conversations that I've had. Definitely some gaps in this one because this is off the dome a little bit. So the final solution that I could toss your way is to produce more oil in-house, sell it to other countries, take some off the top from those trades, and use those profits to provide rebates when purchasing electric vehicles. That way, people aren't being incentivized with record high gas prices, but it would make electric vehicles more affordable and ultimately bring down the demand for gas at the same time. Right? With this idea, though, something to keep in mind is that there are about 9,000 independent oil and natural gas producers, and independent producers means that they do not have more than $5 million in retail sales of oil and gas in a year. And these companies operate in 33 states, employ an average of 12 people, and develop 91% of the wells in the U.S. and produce 83% of America's oil and 90% of America's natural gas. So, in theory, it could make life harder for these independent producers while trying to aim at quote-unquote big oil. Here's some gaps in my research. I have zero knowledge on oil. I'm not an oil expert. Not an oil guy. I don't sniff the oil and give a little taste test to see what's inside of it. I don't know the different types of oils. I don't know how these oils, the different types, are supposed to be properly produced or properly transported. Secondly, another gap in my research is this is all a fairly optimistic viewpoint. Who's to say that our politicians aren't getting a payout to keep these gas prices high? Although President Biden has accused the oil and gas industry of potentially illegal conduct, as these oil execs get rich off of soaring oil prices, and has called for a federal investigation into the matter, but the pessimist viewpoint would be that it was a publicity stunt to keep getting paid. In any case, I hope this provides you with some information on why gas prices are so high. And if you found this podcast valuable, go ahead and subscribe and leave a nice review. I'll see you in the outro. Bye. See you in the outro. That was the episode. You just listened to it. Uploads every Friday at 6 a.m. The real reason you're still here. What's Forrest Gump's password? One Forrest One. One, Forrest, one. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review, screenshot it, share it on your Instagram, share this episode with your friends, and say something nice to them. You are loved, you have purpose, and I will see you next week. Peace. Bye.